research ethics and the history of the guidelines that govern research ethics. My name is Godfrey Tambwa. I am an emeritus professor of the University of Nigeria and the vice president of the Cameroon Bioethics Initiative, CAMBIN. Well, I'm trying to get the slides moving. Yeah, the arrow is not working. Sorry. I think we have to retake that. Hello, everybody. Good morning from here in Yaoundé. In this presentation, we are going to have a very quick overview of research ethics, the history of research ethics, and the guidelines that have governed research ethics. So, let us start with medical ethics. Medical ethics we can define as the moral conduct and principles that govern members of the medical profession. Medical ethics is as old as the art of healing itself, or the art of medicine. And when we think about medical ethics, one name jumps to mind. That is the name Hippocrates, of course, who lived between 460 and 357 BC. He's usually called the father of medicine because he introduced the scientific approach to healing by seeking physical rather than magical, religious, or supernatural causes for disease. I think for that alone, Hippocrates deserves the title of father of modern medicine. And then we think about the Hippocratic Oath, which is an ancient ethical guide for the medical profession. It was elaborated by Hippocrates. It is generally incorporated into the graduation ceremonies of medical students. Of course, as first composed, the Hippocratic Oath contains many old elements, many quaint and archaic elements, but it has been modernized and updated in some institutions. The next name after Hippocrates that we necessarily must mention when we are talking about the history of medical ethics is that of Moshe Ben Maimon. He's usually called Maimonides. He is said to have been a medieval Spanish Jewish rabbi. He was a physician and a philosopher who is said to have lived the second part of his life in Cairo and was in fact a consultant to the pharaoh in Cairo. He wrote a lot and is said to have usually written in Arabic before being translated into Hebrew and then subsequently, of course, translated into English. Two of his famous writings are A Guide for the Perplexed and The Physician's Prayer. The Physician's Prayer, particularly, is said to be or to express the purest expression of medical ethics that has ever been written. The prayer it incorporates or encapsulates the very essence of the Hippocratic Oath. And if you have the prayer, then in fact you don't need the oath. Here are some excerpts from Maimonides' prayer. The external providence has appointed me to watch over the life and health of thy creatures. May I never see in the patient anything but a fellow creature in pain. Now that excerpt is very important. It is the one I like most from the prayer. Another excerpt. O God, thou hast appointed me to watch over the life and death of thy creatures. Here am I, ready for my vocation, and now I turn unto my calling. So this is the conception of medicine as a calling, as a vocation. So both Hippocrates and Maimonides conceived of medicine as a vocation and a calling. Well, up to our day, there are still people who consider medicine as a vocation and a calling. But things have evolved, and there are people who do not necessarily consider medicine as a vocation or a calling. They consider themselves as mere technicians. Okay, so we take a stride from there, and we talk about the Nuremberg trials, which led to the Nuremberg Code in 1947. The post-World War II tribunal, it found some Nazi doctors guilty of unethical experimentation on human beings, and this resulted in the Nuremberg Code, which from the point of view of research ethics is very important. The main thrust of the Nuremberg Code is about voluntary informed consent of the subject of medical research. And the Nuremberg Code states that this is absolutely essential. The Nuremberg Code marks the birth as well as the separation of research ethics from the main body of general medical ethics. The Nuremberg Code gave rise to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was elaborated in 1948. And this was the precursor, the harbinger of the Declaration of Helsinki. The Declaration of Helsinki is associated with the World Medical Association. And in fact, we should talk about the declarations of Helsinki because it has been revised so many times. The World Medical Association was founded in 1948 as an independent confederation of medical associations of different countries around the world. Its first General Assembly was held in Paris, in France, and included about 27 countries, but today the membership has greatly expanded. If we take an outline said that it's been revised numerous times. In itself, it is a set of ethical principles. It is not a legal document containing legal regulations and detailed regulatory procedures. It is a set of ethical principles that are to be followed as such. And it has gone revisions as follows. The first version was elaborated in 1964 in Helsinki. In 1975, it was revised in Tokyo, and the revision had major modifications. Then in 1983, it was again revised in Venice, but there were no major modifications. In 1989, it was revised in Hong Kong, minor revision. In 1996, it was revised in Somerset West in South Africa, and it saw major modifications in Somerset West. Then it was revised again in the year 2000 in Edinburgh, in Scotland, and there were major modifications. Amidst a lot of controversies which have persisted up to the present day. In the year 2008, the Declaration of Helsinki was again revised in Seoul and saw major revisions and continuing controversies. The latest revision occurred in 2013 with a new version of the Declaration of Helsinki. Now, so that is the nitty-gritty of the origins of human subject research ethics. Health research ethics can be said to have been born from scandals and atrocities, because as we have seen, the Nuremberg Code came out immediately after the Nazi scandals, the trials in Nuremberg, and the elaboration of the Nuremberg Code. So human research, subject research ethics, tries to attempt to redress medical research abuses on human subjects. So it marks a distinction between medical ethics in general and medical research ethics. In medical ethics in general, the concern is the concern of medical practitioners, mainly. A medical practitioner before his or her patient. So the doctor-patient relationship is what is central in medical ethics. But in medical research ethics, the concern is expanded to research which involves human beings. Nazi physicians who had conducted experimentation on human beings without any qualms at all were tried between 1946 and 1947 and were sentenced as war criminals for unethical experimentations on human beings. Now, if we talk about the origins of medical research ethics, there are certain individuals that come to mind. We just mention them here one by one in passing so that you may be motivated to research on them and to get fuller information on what these individuals have to do with medical research ethics. One of such individuals is Jenner. You see, until the 19th century, medical experimentation on beings was not controlled, it was not regulated, it was left to the whims and caprices of medical practitioners. And practices like vivisections, surgical vivisections, they were common. And experimentations were carried out on the prisoners and other condemned people. And sometimes prisoners were offered conditions by which they could subject themselves to medical experimentations and get their sentences lightened. In 1776, Edward Jenner, an English physician from Berkeley in Gloucestershire, he manipulated an 8-year-old child, a boy, with the cowpox. And this action led to the discovery of the smallpox vaccine. Edward Jenner has earned the name of father of immunology for discovering the smallpox vaccine. But the way he discovered it is questionable. He inoculated cowpox into a child. Would he have done this? That is a debate that we need to be conducting even up to our day, to be assessing the actions of Yen, even though they led to an important discovery. Was he right in what he did? Another person that we should mention is Thomas Percival. In 1803, this physician from Manchester in England elaborated what is considered the first modern code of medical ethics. Sorry for the interruption. Thomas Percival is believed to have coined the expression medical ethics. And he made the important recommendation that new methods of surgical treatment should be devised, but should be scrupulously and conscientiously governed by sound reason, just analogy, and well-authenticated facts. And he prescribed good methods and competent investigators, but he didn't mention anything about informed consent, which shows that even in the improved procedures that he prescribed, the importance of the consent of the person who is involved in the medical experiment was not yet sufficiently appreciated. Let us take another stride and talk about the Prussian directive. These are terms that you can Google and get fuller information on the subject. In 1900, following public debate on a scandalous case of human subject experimentation, the Prussian government issued a directive absolutely prohibiting experimentation on minors and incompetent adults. It also imposed unequivocal consent of research subjects after due explanation of the possible adverse consequences of the experiment. Also, A certain qualified group of people, we allow only a certain qualified group of people would be allowed to do research, and they have to keep appropriate records. Now, these are the outlines, you know, they are still blurred, but these are the outlines of research ethics as we know it in our day. All that is concerned with the Prussian directive resulted from a scandal. That's why we say that research ethics was born in scandals and abuses. You know, it was a scandalous immunization study in which a certain medical doctor called Neisser inoculated three prostitutes who had been consulting him with the syphilis virus without their consent, in fact, without their knowledge, and they got infected. And another physician who was scandalized by this wrote a paper under a pen name and satirized this scandal. He called it the martyrology of patients offered up as victims of science. So there was no doubt that such experimentation would lead to the development of science. But should patients become martyrs for that sort of development? So the central nitty-gritty of the necessity for research ethics then can take us back to Nazi Germany and the human experimentation atrocities of the Nazi physicians. You see, this between the 1930s and the 1940s, which eventually culminated after the Second World War in the Nuremberg trials and the Nuremberg Code. So one thing that we should note is that because some regulation already existed, and in fact in Nazi Germany there was awareness of the Prussian Declaration, there was awareness of medical ethics, so the Nazi experimentation atrocities occurred in spite of awareness rather than lack of awareness of medical ethics. Now, these are, I've listed some of the examples of the experiments that the Nazi physicians were carrying out, and you can take them one by one and research on them if they particularly interest you. But I give a source, a very important source for these experiments. There's the book edited by Zeke Emanuel. It is published in 2003, and the title is Ethical and Regulatory Aspects of Clinical Research, Readings and Commentary. It's published by the Johns Hopkins University Press in Baltimore. These Nazi experiments are detailed and described in this book, and I encourage everyone to try and read them there. Some of them are really shocking in their details, but we have no time to go into that here. So let us take a stride and talk about the USA, because we are talking about the Nuremberg trials, the Nuremberg Code, the Second World War, the trial of the Nazi war criminals, and these trials were in fact carried out by USA military personnel. But it's very interesting to notice that about the same time, other medical trial scandals President Bill publicly apologized for the Tuskegee scandal in particular. And in 2011, President Obama also made an open public apology for the Guatemala experimental scandals. So, these are things that we should take note of and know that medical research scandals can occur at any time, which is why it is very important to have research ethics committees which scrutinize research protocols before they are carried out in the field. And it is not surprising that in the USA itself, the regulatory framework is very broad. You know, you have the Food and Drug Administration, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, you have the National Research Act, you have the National Commission for the Protection of Human Subjects of Biomedical and Behavioral Research, and we have the Belmont Report. The Belmont Report, of course, is very important. And I think that any research ethics committee in Africa ought to read the Belmont Report in conjunction with the Helsinki Declaration. The Belmont Report resulted from a paper which was elaborated by Henry Beecher in 1966. You see, Beecher highlighted a scandal in research ethics, and from that everybody became aware, and the Belmont Report was elaborated to make sure that such scandals did not happen in the future. It's interesting to know that the USA alone has over 50 regulatory and guidance documents for research ethics regulation. It's very interesting. Now, let us talk about international ethical guidelines for research ethics. There are many, and we can always begin with the Nuremberg Code, which is very important. If we read the Nuremberg Code and we read the Declaration of Helsinki, especially its latest version, if we read the International Guidelines for Ethical Review of Epidemiological Studies, the SIOMS Guidelines of 1991, we read the International Ethical Guidelines for Biomedical Research Involving Human Subjects. It is a SIOMS guideline. SIOMS stands for Council for International Organizations of Medical Societies. It elaborated these guidelines since 1993, revised in 2002. Revised in 2016, and there's an informal revision in 2021. If we are familiar with those so far, they are enough really to be able to regulate and to make sure that the research ethics, research that the protocols, the medical protocols which are being carried out around the African continent can be regulated satisfactorily. And when we talk about medical research in the developing world, in what is sometimes called resource-limited settings, you know, there are certain of these documents then that are very important for us, and the SIOM's guidelines are one of those. And as things develop, there are revisions to these guidelines which take care of modern developments. So international ethical guidelines, I give just points about them. So the WHO has been very interested and has been working hand in glove, you see, with COs to develop these guidelines. Then there are the ICH guidelines, as they are called, on good clinical practice. I think that any member of a research review committee must be familiar with these guidelines. They are supposed to give the thumbprint procedures that scientists should be able to follow in the field and in the laboratory. Then there are some specialized guidelines, like those on HIV/AIDS, you know, ethical considerations in HIV preventive vaccine research. Those exist and can be read. Then we can talk about what should someone who is a member of an ethics review committee take out of these guidelines. What should we be looking for? And I think that the ethical imperatives of medical research anywhere at all, in any country, at any time, should consider that research is subordinate to the interest of science and society. And the interest of science and society is itself subordinate to the well-being of the human subjects who participate in these researches. Therefore, the main fundamental principles are the following. There should be no harm to begin with. So, primum non nocere. There should be no exploitation of research participants. There should be no deceit, no deceiving of people who are taking part in such researches. Their well-informed consent should be obtained. And there should be no cheating. There should be justice and fairness in all the procedures and in what will result from such researches. The problem, however, is that modern medical research, as we know it in the industrialized Western world, is market oriented. It is profit driven. And because of that, there is a susceptibility to be blind to moral considerations. You know, economic forces can always blind moral imperatives. And there is a high degree of ad hoc rationalizations and justifications which can convince you for the moment, but when you reflect on it calmly and coolly, you will find that it was not ethically appropriate. And there are many examples that we can go into. And people in the developing world, in what is called resource-poor countries, or countries with limited resources, particularly in Africa, I believe that it's important to call each country by its proper name. Populations in these countries are very vulnerable to medical research. And this vulnerability is the liability to be harmed, to be exploited, to be deceived, or to be unfairly treated. And this has been realized because it is mentioned in both the Helsinki Declaration and in the SIOM's guidelines. The various dimensions of the vulnerability of people in the developing world, particularly in Africa. And that vulnerability, it even involves those who are doing the research. It involves even the governments that give permission for research to be carried out. So, as members of research ethics committees, it's important for us, whenever we are faced with a protocol, always to ask the question, is this about treatment, or is this research? Or is it research combined with treatment? Is it seeking just scientific knowledge, or is it aiming at the art of treatment and healing from which people who are taking part will be benefiting as well as their communities? We must ask the question, is there any business or commerce involved in this? Will this lead to any profitable products that are sold in the open market? Or is this research all about altruistic philanthropy? These are the questions that, as members of research ethics committees, we need to be asking when we are before the research protocol that is to be carried out in our communities. And the indispensable preconditions of good medical research is that there should be a good scientific design. The science must be correct. And it is usually said that bad science is ipso facto unethical. But good science is not necessarily ethical. We have to scrutinize it to make sure that it is ethical, that it is ethical. Now, we have to ask whether there is adequate funding for the research that is being proposed. And if that too is available, adequate funding, then we ask the last question, do we have well-informed, free and willing subjects who will be taking part in this research? That's the procedure that we must follow. Therefore, we can say that for every protocol to be carried out successfully and ethically, we need a sponsor, we need an investigator, we need subjects, we need a community. And if these combine for a particular project, then we ought to make sure that there is distributive justice, because none of these alone would have carried out the investigation, that have carried out the research. It is all of these together, and there must therefore be distributive justice and we ask the question, has everyone been well treated? Is everyone having adequate benefits from that are accruing from the research in question? That is why I proposed the Kisumu Declaration, you know, which is something that was proposed in Kisumu at a workshop organized by the African Malaria Network Trust. And then it was a workshop of researchers and as well as members of ethics review committees, and they all adopted it. Let me just read it for you, what they proposed that should be taken as a declaration before any research is carried out. We, the investigators, sponsors, and funders of this research or study, hereby solemnly declare on our honor that our intentions in carrying out this research are noble and primarily motivated by the desire to acquire knowledge that could help in alleviating suffering and improving the lot of human beings without any distinction or discrimination, that we have no overt or covert intention or any hidden agenda to harm, deceive, exploit, or unfairly to treat, now or in the future, any human being or group of human beings. We solemnly pledge that in carrying out this research, we will maintain the utmost respect for all participants and experimental subjects and objects, including any plants and animals. We will do everything within our powers to prevent knowledge gained through this research from being abused or used in ways contrary to the above solemnly declared aims and intentions. So that is the Kisumu Declaration, which I hope that members of research ethics committees can read carefully and see whether it is a declaration to which they could identify themselves. I thank you very much for your attention, and when there will be questions and comments and discussions, I think that we will be able to take them.
Merci. Je ne vais pas faire une traduction systématique de l'exposé de mon maître, le professeur Tangwa. Je vais simplement faire une synthèse systématique de ce qui a été dit en français pour que ceux qui n'ont pas compris sa conférence puissent garder au moins quelque chose. Alors, l'exposé du professeur Tangwa portait sur l'évolution de l'éthique de la recherche médicale. C'était un aperçu historique des événements qui ont contribué à la mise sur pied et à l'évolution de l'éthique de la recherche médicale. Donc, mon résumé aura quatre points essentiels. D'abord, les origines de l'éthique médicale. Ensuite, les textes fondateurs de l'éthique de la recherche médicale. Ensuite, les principes de l'éthique de la recherche médicale. Et enfin, les conditions préalables à prendre pour que la recherche soit éthique. Alors, l'éthique médicale est un ensemble de principes moraux qui régissent la profession médicale. C'est donc une éthique déontologique. Quand on parle d'éthique médicale, on est dans la profession médicale. Elle est aussi vieille que la pratique médicale et a pour père fondateur Hippocrate, qui est considéré comme le père de la médecine, parce qu'il a mis sur pied ce qui est connu comme le serment d'Hippocrate que les étudiants en médecine prêtent souvent lorsqu'on leur remet des diplômes. Ensuite, il y a Maïmonide au XIIIe siècle, qui est un rabbin, médecin et philosophe, qui a écrit la prière du médecin. Et dans cette prière, Maïmonide montre que la pratique médicale n'est pas seulement une profession, mais c'est aussi une vocation. C'est-à-dire que le médecin ou le traitant se comporte comme s'il était l'assistant de Dieu. Et Maïmonide fait donc une révolution dans l'éthique médicale en montrant que le médecin n'est pas seulement un professionnel de la santé, mais aussi un assistant au service de Dieu dans le soin des corps et des âmes. Alors, après donc, l'éthique médicale, il y a eu une rupture. Il y a une rupture avec l'éthique de la recherche médicale. Cette rupture s'est opérée à partir du procès de Nuremberg. Le procès de Nuremberg, c'est ce procès après la Deuxième Guerre mondiale qui a condamné des médecins nazis et qui ont fait des expérimentations immorales sur des participants. Alors, ce procès a donné lieu à ce qu'on a appelé le Code de Nuremberg. Le Code de Nuremberg a pour principe principal le consentement éclairé. Donc, pour faire participer un être humain à la recherche, il faut obtenir au préalable son consentement libre et éclairé en lui fournissant toutes les informations, tous les risques auxquels il s'expose, tous les avantages qu'il peut espérer dans le cadre de la recherche. En plus du Code de Nuremberg, il y a la déclaration d'Helsinki qui a été révisée au moins 8 fois. Elle est mise sur pied par l'Association médicale mondiale. Elle propose un ensemble de principes éthiques qui tentent de réguler la recherche médicale qui est née des scandales en Allemagne, aux États-Unis et à travers le monde. Parmi ces scandales, on peut citer les scandales les plus horribles qui sont les expériences nazies, l'inoculation de la syphilis aux Noirs américains dans l'expérience de Tuskegee, l'inoculation d'un médicament nocif aux femmes enceintes toujours aux États-Unis. Et toutes ces expériences-là ont donc donné lieu à la déclaration des Helsinki. Ensuite, dans les années 1900, il y a eu la directive prussienne qui interdisait des expérimentations sur des mineurs et des adultes inaptes en donnant des restrictions de la recherche aux experts. Désormais, seuls les experts pouvaient se porter garant de la recherche avec des êtres humains. Il y a d'autres directives comme les directives internationales pour l'examen éthique des études épidémiologiques des SIOMS en 1991. Il y a la directive internationale de la recherche médicale impliquant des sujets humains 1993, 2002, 2016. Il y a aussi les directives opérationnelles pour les comités d'éthique mis sur pied par l'OMS en 2000. Et il y a enfin le rapport Belmont qui détermine les principes fondamentaux de la recherche avec des participants humains. Alors, ces principes-là sont au nombre de 4. D'abord, ne pas nuire, primum non nocere. Ensuite, ne pas exploiter. Ensuite, ne pas tromper. Enfin, ne pas tricher. Ce qui nous donne comme principe, d'abord le respect des participants, ensuite le principe de bienfaisance et de non-malfaisance, et enfin le principe de justice. Pour terminer, le professeur Tangwa a donné des conditions préalables et indispensables à la recherche médicale. Parmi ces conditions, nous pouvons citer que la recherche soit scientifiquement bien conçue, parce que la mauvaise science est aussi immorale. Il a aussi dit qu'il fallait avoir des ressources et des financements adéquats, avoir des sujets bien informés, libres et volontaires, et enfin mettre un point d'honneur sur la justice distributive, afin que toutes les parties prenantes dans une étude soient récompensées à hauteur de leurs sacrifices. Et il a terminé avec la déclaration de Kissimou, qui insiste sur le respect des personnes, des objets expérimentaux, y compris les plantes et les animaux. Et il nous a dit que les principes de l'étude de la recherche médicale sont conçus dans un esprit et dans une culture occidentale et qu'il revient donc à chaque État, chaque peuple, de les adapter à sa culture afin que tout ce qui est conçu dans un esprit mercantiliste qui peut être dangereux